good to be with you this morning. We're thankful for your presence. We hope that we can say some things that will be encouraging and those things that will be proper for us to understand as we study God's Word in a way that we can rightly divide it, that we might be strengthened in our faith and in our relationship with God. A few weeks ago, I began a series of study on the subject of faith. I want to continue that today, and I want to look at the subject of faith is the victory. And we're going to use as an example, a biblical example, of faith being the victory of the judge during the period of judges, and that is Gideon. Gideon was the fifth judge in Israel, and his life and his the way that he conducted himself is an example of faith granting him the victory. In Hebrews chapter 11, the Bible tells us about Gideon. In Hebrews 11, verse 32 and 33, it says, "And what more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, and stopped the mouth of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens, moved, women received their dead raised to life again, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection." That is a summation of Hebrews chapter 11 that we will talk about later in this series, that is often called the roll call of the faithful. Some have also referred to Hebrews 11 as the hall of fame of the righteous. Be that as it may, those men and women in Hebrews chapter 11 were men and women of faith, and they acted on their faith, and their faith motivated them, guided them, directed them, and helped them gain the obstacles that were ahead of them in order to overcome them, that they might gain the victory. We live in a world where there are many obstacles. There are many things that try to derail us as we strive to win our crown. As we strive to be faithful to God in an ungodly world, in a perverse generation, and we have to deal with adversity, we have to deal with tribulation, and we have to deal with human problems and human tendency, all of this can lose upon us the real necessity of having a strong, vibrant, acting, biblical faith. You and I will never get to heaven without having a strong, biblical faith. In Hebrews 11, one of the statements that's made about faith is that without faith, it is impossible to please God. In Hebrews 11 in verse 6. The reason that it's impossible, because there are going to be times in all of our lives that the only thing you can cling to, the only thing that you can know for certain, is your faith in God, your trust in God, and your understanding that whatever the difficulty and whatever lies ahead, God will help you overcome it. God will help you deal with it. Now again, that does not guarantee us that it will come out the way that we want. I would like to be able to tell you that, but that would be misleading, and that would be not telling you the truth. I can tell you that Romans 8:28 says, "All things work together for good to them that love the Lord." Whatever the outcome is, if we continue to have faith in God and trust Him and love Him, whatever happens will be in our best spiritual interest. Never, ever forget that. Never forget that God is with us, whatever the obstacle, whatever the dilemma, whatever the difficulty. God will give us the ability to deal with it, to handle it, and to not allow it to destroy our faith in God. The only one that has the ability to do that is the individual. The situation will never be able to be blamed for causing a man or woman to lose their faith or to lose their soul. It will only be in the way that they handle whatever that situation might be. There is no better place for us to go to understand this than the period of the judges. The period of the judges is a very interesting case in history that we would do well. And when we went through Old Testament history, we spent a good portion in looking at the book of Judges. The book of Judges is a very turbulent period of Israel's history. And its history was very troubled. And this cycle continues to reveal itself all the way through the period of Judges. This cycle is a repeated cycle of sin, of oppression, and of deliverance. And this cycle goes throughout all the years of the 15 judges, and it lasts for about 300 to 350 years. Now, what would happen in this cycle is that God would raise up a judge to Israel serve the Lord. Let's go up to the top of the chart. Israel is serving the Lord. They got the land that he promised them in the book of Joshua. And now they have received their inheritance. And they are serving the Lord. And then Joshua dies. And the generation that lived with Joshua dies. And then they fall in to sin and idolatry. Why did that happen? Why did they fall into sin and idolatry? Look at Judges chapter 2 and verse 10 will give you the answer of why this nation took a different course. It says, when all that generation had been gathered to their fathers, another generation arose who did not know the Lord nor the work which he had done for Israel. Notice, they fell into sin and they fell into idolatry because they did not know the Lord, nor did they know the things that the Lord had done for the nation. Now, how is that possible? In one generation, they go from being with God, being faithful to God, walking with God, being with God, to go to not know him at all. How is that possible? I'll tell you how it's possible. They were not taught. They did not hear the stories of what God had done for Israel. They forgot his law because they didn't follow it. They didn't read it. They didn't study. They didn't meditate upon it. And since they didn't, they forgot it. And not forgetting the law and forgetting about the God that gave them the land that they were living in and the blessings that they were enjoying, forgetting that all that came from the hand of God, they fell into apostasy. And they fell into sin and idolatry. Now they're oppressed. Israel is given over to oppression. Now when they fail to follow God, when they go into spiritual idolatry, when they go into disobedience, God did to them what he told them he would do to them. He told them way back in Deuteronomy, before they ever went into the promised land, that if you forsake me, if you forsake the law, if you go after other gods, I will destroy you off this land that I've given you. He told them that. And he goes out now to perpetrate exactly what he told them to do. And they fall into oppression. And nations begin to take them over and begin to mistreat them and oppress them. Now you know what they're going to do. They're going to do what they always do. They're going to cry to God for deliverance. And so they call to God for help. They want relief from oppression. They want relief from this difficult hardship that they find themselves in. Now, of course, they're not going to acknowledge in the beginning that they're in that because of their own sinfulness, but they ask God to help them, and they cry to God for help. God hears their cry, and God raises up a judge, a warrior, and that judge and warrior delivers them from the oppression and releases them from that oppression. And by trusting the Lord, Israel is delivered. They're delivered, and they begin again to follow him, to trust him, and to obey him. And then Israel serves the Lord. Then the judge dies. And when the judge dies, what happens to Israel? The cycle begins all over again. And for the next 350 years, this cycle continues to show the fickleness of the children of Israel's relationship in their duty to God. But God is continuing giving them opportunity, as we talked about in our class this morning, to recover, to get it right, to get back to where they need to be. But they are hard-headed, and they're stubborn, and continually never figure out when things are good. When are things good? When they're obedient, when they're faithful, when they're following the covenant, when they're worshiping God as he gave them instruction. They never figure out that all the good is when they're right with God. And so that leads to the period of judges. The period of judges is a story that you could take in a graph. If you looked on a graph of how this is during this turbulent time, it is like this. Up, down. Up, down. Up, down. And it goes that way through all these judges. Now, there are 13 listed on this chart. There are 15 judges during this period of time. The two that are not on this chart is Eli and Samuel. Eli and Samuel will be the last two. But Othniel is the first one. He was the first judge. And then there was Ehud, Shamgar, Deborah. She was the only woman, because Barak was unwilling to do the job that God sent him to do, and Deborah had to convince him to go with him. But Deborah said, if I go with you and we gain this victory, then the people are going to follow me. And that's exactly what happened, and she became the judge. And then Gideon. And Gideon's who we're going to talk about today. And then there was Tola, Jared, and Jephthah. Now, those three judges are talked about in three verses. Those three judges, their names are given, and that's all we know about them. We know how long they reigned, and we know their name. We don't know anything else about them. And then we have Jephthah. Jephthah is the one that we know a little bit about. He's the one that has great controversy around him, because he made a vow that if God would give him the victory over the enemy, that when he came back in victory, being victorious, the first thing that came out of his house, he would offer to the Lord. And the first thing that came out of his house was his only daughter. Now, there's great debate whether he offered her as a burnt offering or whether he gave her life in service to God in another capacity. And that's a story for another time that we could discuss. I have my understanding of that because of what God thought about human sacrifice. The book of Kings says, such a thought never entered the mind of God. It's hard for me to believe that something that never entered the mind of God, that God would receive from one of his servants when he never required it out of any of his servants before then. But also, if you read the account of Jephthah, you'll see that he gave his daughter 2 months to go bewail her virginity with her friends. Now, if you're going to take her life, why would you do that? If you're going to take her life, what good, what would that do? What good would that do? Again, and also remember that there is a tradition of a special day that they remember her being a special day that the Jews have made by tradition. And then we have Izda, Elon, Abaddon, and then the one most familiar to us, Samson. But these judges all had something in common. And what they had in common is that they ruled for a period of time, and then there would be, if you look at the chart, their 8 years in Cushan, and they're under oppression. Then they're 18 years under the king of Moab. Then they're 20 years under Jabin, the king of Canaan. And then they're 7 years under Midian. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. And then they're under the Philistines. And they're under other Moabites. All these nations, by the way, just for information's sake, where did those nations come from? The Moabites, Philistines, Canaan, the Midianites. Where did all those nations come from? You know where they came from? They're the nation, the people left in the land. Remember when God told them to take the land, what did he tell them? Don't show them no mercy. Don't pity them. Destroy them. Make no covenant agreements with them. Make no covenant with them. What did they do? They didn't do that. They left those people in the land. What happened? Those people became their enemies. And these enemies God uses in order to punish his people. And so they are in oppression, but now they're in trouble. And they want help. Now take your Bibles and turn to Judges chapter 6. Because that's where we're going to take our story today in talking about Gideon. The story of Gideon occurs a little over 215 years after Israel enters the Promised Land. This is after they're released from physical bondage in Egypt in the book of Exodus. 215 years after that, we have the story of Gideon. Israel did evil again, and the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Midianites in verse 1. And Israel was greatly impoverished by the Midianites. They would steal their crops. They would put their crops, they would plant them, they would go to harvest them, and when it came time to harvest, the Midianites would come out and they would steal them. And so they're greatly impoverished. Israel had repeatedly ignored God's previous warning in Judges chapter 6 and verse 10. Also, I said to you, I am the Lord your God. Do not fear the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell, but you have not obeyed my voice. I warned you, I told you what I would do, and you did not listen. God calls on Gideon to deliver Israel from the hands of the Midianites. But the Midianites are a superior people, and they are greater in number, as we're going to see in just a moment. And so he's going against a superior enemy, and he's going through a very enemy that's very great and very capable in the art of warfare. And Gideon is called by God to go and deliver his people from the Midianites. In verse 11 and verse 12. Now an angel of the Lord came and sat under the Timnath tree, which was in Ophrah. This belonged to Joash the Asbethite, whose son is Gideon, thresh wheat in the winepress in order to hide it from the Midianites. Now, when the Midianites would come in and steal their crop, Gideon thought he would thresh the wheat, and then he would take it and he would hide it in the winepress. And then the Midianites wouldn't find it, and they would have grain. And so he was in the process of doing that, taking the wheat and harvesting it and then hiding it from the Midianites. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him and said to him, the Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor. Now notice, the Lord is with you, you mighty man of valor. Now remember, Gideon didn't choose this job. Gideon didn't sign up. God chose Gideon. Now I want to remind you of another situation. Moses. God chose Moses. And when he chose Moses, Moses was ready to go, wasn't he? He was eager. Go back, and we're going to talk about Moses next week. Moses didn't think he was the right person for the job. Moses thought he was a nobody. He thought he wasn't eloquent in speech. He thought he was too slow of tongue. He thought he was nobody. Nobody's going to listen to me. And he had to be convinced by God that God made the right call in taking and making Moses the deliverer of the Israelites out of Egypt. And you know what? When you study the book of Exodus, God made the right call. Moses was the right man. Now what about Gideon? Is he ready to go? Is he anxious to deliver his people from the Midianites? No. Gideon questions God. Look at verse 13. Gideon says to him, now he's talking to God. He's talking to the angel. Oh my Lord, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are all his miracles with our fathers told us about, saying, did the Lord not bring you up from Egypt? But now the Lord has forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites. Now here's the man that God has chosen to deliver the Midianites, to deliver Israel from the Midianites. And he questions the angel. He says, if the Lord is with us, what does that mean? That means Gideon didn't believe the Lord was with them. And you know what? He's right. They're not with him. God is not with Israel. He's right about that. You know, he questions God about, he questions the angel about that. But he's right about that. But what he's wrong about is why. Why has all this happened to us? If God loves us and he's our God and we're with God, why is he let this happen to us? Why has this fate befallen us? Well, that's a good question. Where are all his miracles? We heard about the parting of the Red Sea. We heard about the 10 plagues. We heard about him destroying Egypt. And we heard about his great deliverance. We heard about all that. Where is it now? Where is it now that we need it? Now the Midianites are stealing our crops. They're oppressing us. They're trying to bring us into bondage. Where are all those miracles now? You know what? They knew some things, didn't they? They remembered some things, didn't they? But they forgot the most important thing. But now the Lord has forsaken us and delivered us into the hands of the Midianites. You know what? He's right about all of this. God is not with them. God has delivered them to the Midianites. And God did do all those things in Israel. What's the only difference in what happened in Israel and what's happening now? The only difference is they were with God then, they're not with God now. And they had forsaken God. They went into idolatry. And they did not obey his covenant. And they broke the covenant. And the reason that God is not with them is not due to God's fault, it is due to their fault. He's not there because he's not in their heart. That's why he's not there. So who's to blame? It's not God. It's Israel. Verse 14, then the Lord turned to him and said, go in this your might of your... You notice God didn't answer. You notice God didn't tell him, hey, wake up. Look at what your people, look at what you're all doing. He didn't do that. Why didn't God explain himself? You know why? Because he didn't have to. He'd already told them. If they knew about the miracles, they knew about their duty to God. If they knew about what he did, they also knew that they had a responsibility to be faithful to God. and they should have known why they were being oppressed. The reason that God doesn't explain himself is because they already knew. They just didn't want to acknowledge it. He says, go in this your might of yours, and you shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have I not sent you? Now notice God says, go. Don't worry about what's happened. Don't question me. Just go. I'll be with you. If I go, if I lead you and I call you and I'm with you, you're gonna be fine. Does that convince him? Does that convince him to go? No. Look at verse 15. So he said to him, oh my Lord, how can I save Israel? Indeed, my clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house. I can't. I can't do it. And you know what? He's right about that too. He can't do it by himself. But you know what? He's not by himself. He's right. He can't do it by himself. But who's sending him? Who's sending him into battle? God is. If you're with God, you're in the higher ground. If you're with God, you're in the catbird seat. You're in the best position possible. No matter what the enemy is. No matter what the dilemma is. If you're with God, and he calls upon you to do something, and he requires something out of you, he's going to give you the ability to do it, and you're in the best possible position you can be. You know the only one that doesn't know it? Is Gideon. So you've got to convince him. I don't have what it takes. Indeed, my clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I'm the least in my father's house. We're in the weakest family. And Manasseh, he doesn't have a very good track. Manasseh becomes a very wicked king. And Judah, very wicked. But he's the least of in Manasseh's clan. He's the least. He's at the bottom of the list. What's he looking at here? He's looking at physical stature. He's looking at physical things. None of that matters. It doesn't matter if he's the only one in Manasseh's family. It doesn't matter what his standing is. In Israel. That doesn't matter. Listen to me. When God calls upon us to do something, it doesn't matter about the other things in this scenario. The other surrounding things, it doesn't matter. All that is immaterial. It does not matter. If God has asked us to do something, and he's given us a duty to do, and he's given us the ability to do it, all the other things that are out there don't matter. They don't matter in the final analysis. They don't matter. Because you have everything you need in order to accomplish what God's asked you to do. What's the only thing you need? Faith. Faith. That's what Gideon needed. Gideon needed to enact his faith. Gideon was right, but it was not his strength that would bring victory. Look at verse 16. And the Lord said to him, surely I will be with you, and you shall defeat the Midianites as one man. Now, who's telling him that? God's angel saying, get in there. I am with you. You're going to defeat this nation. And you're going to do it as one man. The nation's going to be behind you. You're going to win this battle. Do you remember what Paul said in Philippians 4:13? I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. You know what Gideon's having a problem with? He's having the same problem Israel had when they went to the borders of the land of Canaan. In Numbers 13 and 14. You remember that? You remember they just witnessed God's power in Egypt. They just saw God dismantle the mightiest nation on earth, and God brought it to its knees. And then he destroyed their king, their Pharaoh, and his army in the Red Sea, and they had eyewitnesses. They saw it. They saw God do that. They knew that he did that. Now, what's the problem? When they were going into the promised land, God, Moses sent in spies. And they surveyed the land. And you know what? If you go back to the book of Deuteronomy, you know what God told them when they got to the land? You know what he told them? He said, their armies are going to be bigger than yours. There's going to be more of them than there is of you. And they're going to be mightier in their warfare than you are. But he said, don't let that worry you. Because as long as I'm with you, they can't defeat you. But when they came back 40 days later, what happened? Joshua and Caleb said, they've heard about us. They've heard about what God did to Egypt. Their hearts melt within them. It's ready to be taken. They're afraid of us. Let us go in and take the land. That's what Joshua and Caleb said. But what did the other 10 men say? They took Gideon's rod. Oh, they're great walled cities. They got great armies. They got giants in the land. They'll squash us like grasshoppers. They're too mighty. We're not equipped to take them on. They will defeat us. What were they looking at? Who were they looking at? They were looking with their eyes at what they saw. And they forgot with their heart that God was with them. And because of that, because that was their choice, they cried all night, and they were going to replace Moses and Aaron, and they were going to go back to Egypt. God said, I've had enough. I've had enough. And God caused them to wander in the wilderness for the next 40 years. And every person over 20 years old that came out of Egypt died in the wilderness except two men. Joshua and Caleb. Now Gideon has the same dilemma that Israel did. He's got to trust God and put his faith in God. Gideon was right, but he could not take them alone. But he could take them if God was with him. But what did Gideon need? What did Gideon need to seal the deal? He needed reassurance. What kind of reassurance? Look at verse number 17. Let's read for a few verses. Then he said to him, if now I have found favor in your sight, then show me a sign that this is you who talks with me. Do not depart from here, I pray, until I come to you and bring out my offering and set it before you. And he said, I will wait until you come back. The angel says, I'll wait. Go get your offering and bring it, I'll wait for you. So Gideon went and prepared a young goat, unleavened bread, and meat from the flour, and meat, and he put it in a basket. And he put the broth in a pot, and he brought them out underneath the terebinth tree, and presented them. And the angel of God said to him, take the meat and the unleavened bread, and lay them on this rock, and pour out the broth. And Gideon did so. Then the angel of the Lord put out the end of the staff that was in his hand, touched the meat and the unleavened bread, and the fire rose out of the rock, consumed the meat and the unleavened bread, and the angel of the Lord departed out of his sight. What did he want? He wanted a sign. Did he get it? He got the sign he asked for, didn't he? If this is you, If this is what you really want me to do, and you're going to be with me, give me a sign to reassure me. Didn't God do that? God did that, didn't he? Now he'll go. Oh, no, not yet. Now look at verse 25. Then the Lord said to him in verse 23, "Peace be to you, and do not fear, you shall not die." So Gideon built an altar there to the Lord and called it "The Lord is Peace." And this day is still in Ophrah by the Abizites. He built an altar. Now he has faith, right? No, not yet. Now it came to pass the same night. Now look at verse 25. "Take your father's young bull and the second bull of 7 years old and tear down the altar of Baal, which your father has, and cut down the wooden image that is beside it, and build an altar to the Lord your God on top of this rock in proper arrangement, and take the second bull and offer a burnt offering with the wood of the image of which you cut down." So Gideon took 10 men from among his servants and did as the Lord said to him. But because he feared his father's household, the men of the city too much, to do it by day, he did it by night. Now, why would the angel of the Lord tell him to go tear down the altar of Baal and the Ashtoreth pole that's beside the altar of his father? You know why he did that? Because that's why they were being oppressed by Midian. Because they were guilty of spiritual idolatry. As a proof of that, he's trying to put in Gideon's mind, the reason that you're in this problem is because your father and the Jews are following these foreign gods. He says, if you want my help, destroy the altar of Baal, replace it with my altar, and offer a bull on that altar to the Lord. He does it. But he does it at night. You know why? So nobody saw him. Now, what I want you to see is Gideon has faith, but it's tempered. It's not yet complete. He's moving in the right direction because he does what God told him. But he's still not where he needs to be. Then, we're not going to read this for time's sake, but the men of the city are angry when they find out that he's tore down the altar of Baal and he's taken down the Asherah pole. And they want to kill Gideon. They say, "Who did this? Who did this and tore down the altar of Baal and the image beside the Asherah pole? Who did this? We need to punish him." They said, "Gideon's done it." And they want to kill Gideon. And when the men of the city rose early in the morning, there was an altar of Baal torn down. So they said to one, "Who has done this?" And they said, "Gideon, the son of Joash, has done this thing." And then the men of the city said to Joash in verse 30, "Bring out your son that he may die, because he has torn down the altar of Baal, and because he has cut down the woman with the image that was beside it." Does Gideon's father give him over to him? No. No, he doesn't do that. You know what he does? He said, "Wait a minute. If he sinned against Baal, let Baal punish him. Let Baal take his life. If he's really God, Baal will take care of him." You know what that father knew? He knew Baal couldn't do anything. He wasn't afraid of Baal. Look at what he says. He says in verse 31, "But Joash said to all who stood against him, 'Would you plead for Baal? Would you save him? Let the one who would be plead for him be put to death by morning. If he is a god, let him plead for himself, because his altar has been torn down.'" Therefore, on that day he called him Jerubbaal, because let Baal plead against him, because he has torn down his altar. But you know what? What happened when Elijah gave the prophets of Baal the opportunity to call on Baal to light the sacrifice on Mount Carmel? What happened when they prayed to Baal and jumped on the altar and cried from morning till midday, cut themselves with knife, put their blood on the altar, and they cried to the evening sacrifice? What did Baal do? Nothing. Nothing. You know who knew that story? Joash. He wasn't afraid of Baal. He knew Baal didn't have any power. Remember what Elijah did? Elijah said, you gather around me. Bring the prophets of Baal. Bring all the prophets of God and the nation of Israel. Come up here. He said, there's the altar. He says, pour water on it. So they poured water on it. He said, do it again. Do it three times. And they built a trench along the altar of God. And he poured 18 barrels of water on that altar and soaked it in the wood. What happens to wood when it gets wet? It won't light. And you remember what Elijah did? He said, let all of Israel know that all the things that I have done here, I have done at your command. And now light this sacrifice and show these people who God really is. And not only did he light the altar, he licked all the water that was in the trench. And he consumed the sacrifice was on the altar. And what did every man that was there knew? They knew that God was the real God. Now, we're going to stop here tonight, this morning, because Gideon wants one more thing to be absolutely sure that God is going to be with him when he goes against the Midianites. And here's what I want you to do for the rest of today. Read the rest of Judges chapter 6. And ask yourself this question. Did God provide the things that Gideon wanted for his sake or for Gideon's sake? I want you to think about that today. He's going to ask something from God to reassure him even more. Let's see if God gives it to him and why. And we'll talk about that tonight. Please take your song books out to the song of Brother Rutherford is selected as a means of invitation. If you're here and you have a need, you need to obey the gospel. If you're here and you need to correct your life, and you need prayers on your behalf, or you need prayer for strength, hope for encouragement, whatever way we can help you, we're here to do so. The Bible tells us that the Lord desires that all would be saved. And we don't want to close this service without giving you an opportunity to render obedience in any need you might have. And we're here to help you as together we stand. And as we sing.